Om Jum Sa, Vyam Vyasa Deva, Sa Jum Om. All right, so we left off, I have on page 34. And on page 34, we get to meet Niyati. Niyati. So Niyati, to some, is a concept. In the Pancharatra, she's a goddess. Similar to Kali being a goddess. Who knows off the top of their head what Niyati is? So, can you grab the picture that's hanging up above Saraswati right there? And be real careful, because there might be a yantra behind it. That picture, right in front of you. No, on the wall, yeah, that. The big picture, Okay. But be careful, because there might be a yantra behind it. Alright, so Niyati, she, as Kali, is this goddess of time that exists.
I guess I'll hold her.
So this is the original. I called up the artist, and luckily I was able to buy the original of this one. Let's see, I gotta turn it that way.
Really close. She's got infinity in her hand.
She's got infinity in her hand. Go ahead and get back up.
It looks like a bunch of stars and like a fairy almost like image.
It's a goddess. It's a goddess image. And Niyati is this. She's like, as Kali is physical time personified, Niyati is the subtle level of time personified. She's time on the Manomaya Kosha personified. She's time within our mind, within the Antakarana personified. So she's the time that where Kali interacts with us while we're in physical manifestation. When we leave this body and we're in between, Niyati is the goddess who decides which karmas out of all the lives that we've had that we're going to experience in this life. She puts them all together, fits the chart, and boom, we pop out of our mothers. Based upon her organization, and that organization of Niyati, and you see, so internally within us, she is why certain thoughts are arising at certain times. Like, why am I thinking about Jyotish now at 6 o'clock on a Wednesday? That Jyotish would be, why am I thinking about her at 6 o'clock on a Wednesday, you know? And why at 9 o'clock am I going to be thinking about, like, whether they have kefir at Elixard or not? And, you know, the local, what do you call that?
Lounge.
The local non-alcoholic beverage lounge that we're lucky enough to have in Nevada City. So, like, why do certain things happen? Why are certain things arising in us at certain times? Why do the dashas work? The dashas work because Niyati is coordinating everything accordingly. So she both picks our chart and is making these things arise on a psychological level, while Kali is making everything happen on a material level. So let's see. The aspect of time arising from Niyati is its ripening Pachanam form. So she's the they call her the ripener. Last sentence here says, step by step, according to time, the soul determines which karma it will experience and then manifests its body made of gunas. So this is from the Ahir Buddhana Samhita. So we can see what she's doing according to there. And I give a little reference in here at the bottom of the page to Shushrut Samhita. And here it says, according to Advaita, time is just an illusion of the mind. And so this can be seen as the process of limitation by Maya. So Niyati, from the Advaitin perspective, is considered this thing that limits us, that's like tying us down. oh my gosh, I just got confined by my karmas, and now I'm in lockdown, and oh no, those karmas are pulling me towards the earth, and oh, I'm incarnated again. So that's the Advaitin concept, you know, is that these are these limitations for us, not that they're like a good or beautiful thing. And we in the Shrisut Samhita, Shariristana, Niyati is called one of the six aspects of Prakriti, known by those with wide vision. So, Shariristana. What's the Shariristana, Frank? Oh, don't hear you.
What it's about?
Yeah, what is the concept? It's what's just the Shariristana?
Turn that off. The body, basically, how it's manifest, functioning.
So the Shariristana in Shrishrut and Charaka, in Ayurvedic texts in general, is the concept of how did the body come to exist? Like, what is this body made of and how did it come to be? And just like we were looking at those concepts of time and gunas, of how they made us be, for the Ayurveda has that same emergent philosophy in the Ayurvedic text, and that exists in the Shariristana. So just like we're starting it here in the beginning, the Shariristana is where it has it in Ayurveda. And I'm just going to read up until 11 of Shrishrut here, Shariristana. It goes, now I shall expound the chapter on consideration on all beings, as propounded by Lord Dhanvantari. The unmanifest, the avyakta, sound familiar? The unmanifest is the causative source of all beings, causeless, characterized by sattva, rajas, and tamas. So you see, like, we can see the Pancharatra, like, concept in here, you know, but not defined to the same level. Unmanifest is the causative source of all beings, causeless, characterized by sattva, rajas, and tamas, having eight forms and manifesting cause of the entire universe. It is one and location of many souls as sea is of watery streams. What an Indian translation. So, it is one and location. It's that one location where of all souls, similar to how all streams go into the ocean. From the unmanifest, Mahat, having the same attributes, originates. From such Mahat arises Ahankara, having similar attributes. So here we have the Mahat and the Ahankara, where they don't have the Buddhi or the Manas in there. But we have that same philosophy. It is of three types, Vaikarika, Taijasa, and Bhutadi, which we did in the end of the last chapter. Out of them, from Vaikarika Ahankara, with collaboration of Taijasa, 1, 11 Indriyas have its attributes emerge, such as, and then it lists all of them. From Bhutadi, the five elements come, and the tanmatras of sound, touch, da-da-da-da, their perceptible emanations being sound, touch, vision, taste, and smell, which are emanating from Akash, Vayu, Agni, Jala, and Prithvi. Thus, 24 primary elements are explained. So here he's using 24, which in the Sankhya that we did in Parashara, we use 25. Because we're saying that time is one of the attributes as well. Time is one of those tattvas. Let's see. Of them, objects of sensory organs are sound, while those of motor organs are speech, receipt, enjoyment, release, and movement respectively. The unmanifest, Mahat, Ahankara, and the five tanmatras, these are Prakriti, the causative source, while the remaining 16 are products. So it's basically saying that the eyes, the ears, the taste, those are products of what the other things are coming from. And let's see.
Yeah.
Their respective objects pertain to the Bhutas, they themselves pertain to the living body, and their presiding deities are Brahma of the Buddhi, Ishwara of the Ahankara, the moon rules the mind, the quarters, which means the directions, lord of the directions, the auditory organ, vayu for the tactile organ, the sun for the eye, the jala, water for the taste, the earth for smell, agni for speech, indra for the hands, vishnu for the feet, mitra for the anus, and prajapati for the genitals. So again, that's all from the last chapter. Now this entire group is insentient. Purusha, spirit, is the 25th one. So here it's using that as the 25th, but makes them sentient by combining with Prakriti. Hereafter, similarity and dissimilarity. I'm going to skip that. The effect corresponds with calls. All these entities are endowed with sattva, rajas, and tamas. Some say that purushas, which some say that people, also have the same attributes because of being characterized by, endowed with them. In medicine, however, those with broad vision regard nature, God, time, chance, cosmic order, and transformation as Prakriti. So he's adding that in medicine, that there's also this view that these other things also are factors. You know, and when he says Prakriti, this guy is translating it as primary cause, but we're going to translate it more as the components that make reality. Okay? And so the word he uses for nature is swabhava. We talked about swabhava last time, that inherent nature that you are. So he says, so those with broad vision, the wise ones, you know, those that got the full view, which is us, right? Because we're Jyotishis. Regard nature, swabhava, God, Ishwara, time, kala, chance. It's this word that means spontaneous, accidental. And then it says cosmic order. And the cosmic order, the word they're using there is niyati. So he's translating niyati as cosmic order. Which, if we looked at what her function was, that makes sense, right? But, you know, we look at her as this subtle level of time. And then transformation, parinam. These as primary factors making the universe. And the author's commentary says, thus these six Prakritis are admitted into Ayurveda. Whether these six are synonyms of the eight formed Prakriti or different therefrom, and he gives some debates and all that. But bottom line is, we see that niyati is, you can see this whole structure that he's creating is very similar to the structure that we're using, right?
So, these 25,
25 plus 6. Okay. You just added 6 on top of those 25.
So how do we, all these originate from?
Which? What do you mean?
Like, I don't know if I missed something, but like how do,
it's the same as the end of chapter 1.
Okay.
Go to that big old diagram.
I need to review. The first time I listened to it was like,
So this diagram right there. That's the 25.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Page 24.
Okay, so yeah, it's combining the senses.
So we have the avyakta and the vyakta. He's just saying avyakta. So he's saying avyakta, and then he goes right to mahat from avyakta. So where here it's saying avyakta and vyakta. Because all this is vyakta. So he's just mentioning the avyakta. And he's not mentioning the amrita. He's like, This is not a religious text. This is a medical text. But there's this unmanifest, and from unmanifest we get manifest. But, you know, he doesn't say we get manifest. He just says, from the unmanifest we get mahat. And then we get ahankara. And then we get all this.
All right.
Okay.
Go, I'm going to... Yeah. I'm going to listen to and read through the chapter one more time.
All right, but you see, it's fundamental. Like right here in the beginning of Charaka Samhita, it's in the beginning of, it's in the the Sharirasthana of Charaka Samhita, it's in the Sharirasthana of Shashrut Samhita. all have their little variations based upon their school. Like how we focus so much on time, these guys wouldn't focus on time for more than a second. You know, as fast as we focused on the anus, that's how much they focus on time. But for some, you know, but they're treating anal fistulas and diarrhea, and so they're going to focus on the anus a whole lot. And I'm just using that as an example, but Mitra is the lord of the anus here, right? Which varies from the system that I use, which puts yama as into the anus. But any which way. Yama in the anus? Yama is lord of the anus. Come on, let's say the right. All right. So niyati here. And the whole reason I read that was just to show, one, the similarity of the systems, and two, how niyati is also being recognized, even in the Ayurvedic text. So I'm not just pulling this out of anywhere. You know what I mean? This is a fundamental foundation. And if we're going to be you don't go to college and take a biochemistry class if you've never studied chemistry. This is our fundamentals. This is the components that make everything. How it works, why it works. Yeah, listen to that part again.
Yeah, it was pretty.
It's important.
It was. It's a lot of information.
Oh, that's an understatement, right? All right. Any questions on Niyati? She's cool, huh? Much nicer than Kali on a certain level. And Cosmic Order. What a nice name. What a nice way to translate Niyati. I just say the subtle aspect of time. Because it really doesn't have a direct... Yeah, go ahead.
Is she commonly worshipped at all? I mean...
No, not commonly.
Yeah.
Only in the tantras. Let's see.
What would be a purpose or function of her worship? Just...
She's not worshipped directly. She's worshipped in the different chakras. You know how there's the petals in the different yantras, and each petal is worshipped. And the general concept is, in those petal worship is the deity that you're trying to understand. They have different attributes and different things that need to be pacified in order for you to get the realization. So if, you know, the fixed order of the universe, time, the ego, speech, like what are the things that like in a certain yantra, they all get pacified together. And then the next level of our psychic structure gets pacified. And then the next level and then they start doing the different forms of Ganesh or the different forms of Devi in the triangles. So this is where we see her worshipped. Niyati, when I look her up in Monier Williams, it says the fixed order of things, necessity, destiny, fate. She's sometimes translated as fate. And in that way, if you think about the Romans and the Greeks, you know how they had the fates?
No.
No? So, let's see. If we just do a quick Google and we say Greek fates. You can see three women pop up. And so those three women, they're the Greek counterpart to Niyati. And let's see. According to the Greeks, now we're going slightly off topic, but Greek fates. There are three of them. They're called the Morai. Their names were Clotho, the one who spins the thread of life, Lachesis, who draws the lots and determines how long one lives by measuring the thread of life, and Atropos, the inevitable, she who chose how someone dies by cutting the thread of life with her shears. So one of them is sitting there spinning the thread, the other one is pulling it to determine how long, and then the other one cuts it. And that thread is considered your life. So this is the Greek counterpart to Neeti. They have her.
So
they
can you differentiate? Can you differentiate again between Kali and Neeti?
Kali is time in the physical realm. She's the physical manifestation of time. The fact that you're going to go to sleep tonight is Kali's power. And that you're going to wake up tomorrow and you're going to be a little bit older. And that in 2 years from now, you're going to get your first gray hair. That's Kali. the fact that the material world is unfolding is Kali.
Well, so that's like the time that is kind of the same for everyone is Kali, like the way people age and the days and the cycles of the...
Yeah, the same for everybody. So we can look at her in two different levels. We can look at her at the lowest level of just the physical manifestation, and then we can look at her as all levels personified, depending on which rupa form or whatever of Kali we're using. But to differentiate Neeti from Kali, Kali is manifesting the physical reality, where Neeti is manifesting the mental reality.
Okay, so Kali is more just how you age, like you're saying, how you physically age.
It's also making today tomorrow. It's making the clock tick right now. If you're in a dream, there's no clock ticking. You can speed up time or slow time down. You can be running away from a tractor trailer and be moving so slow, and the tractor trailer is moving that slow too. You know, time, there's a distortion because time doesn't exist the same. You got that part, right? Now, at the same time, in your dream, certain images are arising and then falling away, and other images are arising. So that which is making the different images arise, that it's because those images are kalana as well. Remember we talked about kalana, that urging forth? Re-listen to these lectures the next day if you need to.
I just remembered that word specifically because I know someone named kalana or kalana. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, that's cool.
So kalana is it's what's making a plant grow. It's what makes us old. It's what makes one day turn into the next. It's that thing that's pushing everything forward. In the mental realm, there is no physical thing, but yet images, everything isn't there at the same time. Even images are unfolding one at a time. If Neeti gets intense with you, then all of a sudden you have image, and you start getting anxiety, and you know it gets too much, overwhelm. But so you got the difference. One is in the subtle body, one is in the physical body. And Neeti, she creates, we could say, the subtle body. She is the time there, but by her being that time, she limits that reality to create it. She's the mother of time on the mental realm, of the unfolding of the mental realm, of how the mental realm is moving from one to the next image. Because that's what the mental realm is.
So it's
images.
And it seems like... It seems like the qualitative versus quantitative. Like Kali would be the qualitative time, and Neeti would be.
I wouldn't say that either. Okay. I mean, you can't. On a certain level, they work together.
Yeah.
So they're not opposed to each other. They're not doing different things. You know. It's just Kali is making the material world a material world. Where in the dream realm, in your mental realm, those images aren't real. Thank God that half the images in our mind aren't real, all right? I mean, half the things we worry about, imagine if it just became real, just that instantly. So the unfolding of our mind, the time on that level is Neeti. And on that level, the difference between time and the physical realm, you know, in the physical realm it was 6 o'clock. And so you know, he showed up at my door at 6 o'clock and came in. That's his physical body came inside a physical room to sit next to me in physical form. And you guys are online, and I don't know how, it's still like physical time to physical time, right? We're interacting in physical time and space. Now, Niyati, she's determining, you know, right now, what are you thinking? She's determining what karmas were put into you to create certain attitudes, to make certain desires arise at different times. Why is mind thinking in the way it is? And why does one image turn into another? And think about when you lay down if you laid down in bed and had a hard time sleeping. I think that might be the best. Have you had an insomniac kind of night anytime recently?
Yeah, all the time.
Okay. I don't have them, so like for me it's really rare. I can sleep through almost anything. Just because I sleep so little, like sleep like 4 or 5 hours, so it's like when it's sleep time I'm like I need my, you know, I need to go back down. When you're laying there sleeping, notice you start thinking about something, and then that thought leads you into thinking about some other things, and then all of a sudden it's a cycle, and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm thinking about that again, right?
Mm-hmm.
So this whole unfolding of thoughts and how this order that they're unfolding and this cycle that they run through, this is Niyati making them unfold.
Okay, so that's interesting to me, because you've also talked about the horas, you know, and how each one is ruled by a different planet, yep. And how those yep. bring thoughts into your mind. So what's the relationship of Niyati to that?
Horas are time, right?
Yeah.
And so
just like different flavors out there?
So basically, what's the difference between your physical body and your mental body? And your causal body. You right now as Maggie. The difference between your physical body, your mental body, it's about that far around, and then your causal body. It's this nice big bubble. I want an answer.
So the physical body is much more bound by the elements.
Kali, yep.
Okay. And then they're just different layers of reality, right? And one of them, the causal body is more closely tied to the unmanifest. Right? If I remember from last.
I wouldn't say it's unmanifest. It's manifest. The only thing that's unmanifest is the unmanifest.
It's unphysical.
It's unphysical. It's unphysical.
Okay, yeah.
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 It's more subtle, but it's not. When we use the term unmanifest, we're actually talking about a thing. The avyakta is a thing. It can actually even be measured and weighed. So just like you have a physical body, and then you have a mental body and a causal body, so Kali is that physical body of time. Niyati is the mental body of time.
Okay.
So your mental body is not doing something without your physical body. Well, your mental body can do something without your physical body isn't doing anything without your mental body. Hopefully. So there's nothing happening on the level of the world and time externally that is not being coordinated with that internal realm.
Okay.
Isn't on a certain level too? I mean, Kali more subtle than, you know, the mental Manomayo Kosha? I mean,
and as
depending
I said,
how we take it.
It depends whether you're using Kali, meaning using Kali as the summary of all forms of time, or whether you're talking about Kali as the mother of the physical universe.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about Kali, and when we call her that Tamas Guna, you know how Kali gets associated with Tamas Guna?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, like the Nila Shakti and all that.
So when we're talking about Nila Shakti and Tamas Guna, Kali, we're talking about the mother of physical time. When we talk about Mahakali, who's this supreme mother, then we're at a different level.
Okay.
You know, and in that part, we're talking about her as supreme goddess of everything. But that's a different realm. That's pre-Guna and post-Guna. Pre-Guna, post-Guna. That's pre-creation and post-creation. Pre-creation, you know, when we're in that realm, and we were talking before about how there's the different undas, the different eggs. So in that unda where just all the elements, the prakritis are coming into being, and the universe hasn't, they haven't mixed, so the universe hasn't been created. In that realm, we can have Kali as the supreme mother. But when the mix happens, then the goddesses take on the attributes of the gunas. And as the attributes of the gunas, that tamas shakti is time in the material realm.
And by that moving too, then even on that level, Niyati is still a little lower in a certain degree, right? Because
lower. What do you mean lower?
It's. I mean, the Tamas Guna gets time, you know, churning, and like, you know, everything starts mixing, and then comes Niyati and these mental kind of functions, and mm-hmm.
and then comes
that kind of thing.
Then comes the Nila Shakti of Kali that actually creates the physical world. So Niyati is more subtle than gross time. And that's, you even look at the term here, I translate it as subtle time. She's subtle time as compared to gross time. And the big difference is that gross time is krama. It's unfolding in an orderly fashion. Its order is linear. Where that subtle time, it doesn't have to be linear. But it's very selective. It's determining a very specific thing that it's working with, but linearity does not exist.
Yeah, that much is clear.
All right. So, Jai Ma, Niyati. So next page 35. I'm just gonna point out two things. So the second originally was defined by 186,400th of the average time required for the Earth to complete a complete rotation. And so that used to be the definition of a second from Western science. Western science said, okay, we have to make, we need a better definition here. And so that was their first definition. But then the Earth, they found out later, didn't spin exactly the same all the time. And so that kind of like ruined their whole definition. And so they had to come up with a new definition. And with the atomic clock, they take the cesium atom, and they time how much it's, you know, it's breaking down, it's with its pulsation. So the atomic clock is based upon the change of a cesium atom. The old way was the change of the rotation of the Earth. Both of those things are movements. They're lengths of change. Neither one of them requires space. So the Earth is spinning. We're not measuring how big the Earth is. It's the time for this turn to happen. The other one is the time for this pulsation to happen. So time, even if we look at how it's being measured, is irrelevant of space. And I heard this lecture. I wanted to look him up, and then I spaced it. There was a guy on NPR the other day, big physicist, the guy in charge of the holographic universe theory.
Oh, I read that book.
And
Michio Kaku, or
something like that. Yeah.
He's what's his name?
There are two members in this conference.
Oh, I feel bad. I forgot that guy's name. That was a really good book.
Oh no. Where'd they go?
We're here.
I know, but can you hear? We can't see you. Just because our screen is all off. Let's see. Why did it do this? Can you guys still hear us? Any which way. He basically said that In quantum physics, the math of quantum physics doesn't equal what the universe is unless you take out either space or time. And if you take out space or time, then all the math works. But if you have space or time in there, it doesn't work. It was really interesting. But that's his whole holographic universe reality. Yeah.
Freedom, I have a question. This is
off topic.
Okay. So you're talking about space and...
Yes.
Am I echoing?
A little bit, yes.
So my understanding was that time is related to Saturn and space is related to Jupiter.
You're in a... Okay, go ahead.
I don't know. I was just thinking about... So you're talking about the relationship between space and time. And then I was thinking about the existential yoga that Frank has that I've been seeing more and more in people's charts. So does that... Are those... Does that relate?
Existential yoga. What do you mean existential yoga?
Yeah, yeah. The Jupiter...
Brahma yoga.
And Saturn. Yeah.
You could say it relates, you know, it's that Jupiter, the Jupiter Saturn has that desire to understand creation.
Yeah.
To understand where we come from, which is time coming into space, right? I didn't look at it that way, but I guess you could, huh?
I'm curious about that yoga too. I mean, since, Jupiter's in a sign for about a year. I mean, is that going to give like an imprint on people born in that year to a certain degree?
What do you mean an imprint?
I mean, you know, so they might be a little, you know, because I'm thinking about like students I work with and, you know, a whole grade might have that in their chart. So, and I'm just thinking about trying to map like different years of grades to see if there's this impulse based on Jupiter, so like maybe they're a little more philosophical, or I mean, obviously gets tweaked by so many factors, but
all right. So
if they have that, you know, is there some kind of like, you know,
page 65. Write a note on it, and we'll discuss it on page 65, because that's what
okay.
That is.
That cycle. Okay.
but that is that cycle. What you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it completely stamps them. All right. So then we have, I think that's good there. Justin just ran to the bathroom. Let's see, page 36. Do we want to go there? Time, exerting his irresistible strength, cooks all creatures. With the aid of his ladle constituted by months, seasons. Time exerting his irresistible strength. So time's flexing his muscles. cooks all creatures with the aid of his ladle. His ladle is made of months and seasons, and he's cooking all creatures. Okay? The sun is his fire. The days and nights are the fuel that the fire is burning on. The man possessed of true vision, beholding this world to be only the field of action, should do good acts. Time cooking everything. Isn't it a fire? I love that metaphor there. All right. So
I feel it.
On the other side, 37, Shiva is white and Kali is black. And that's the whole day-night thing going on. Why is Shiva white? And why should Kali be black? Because Kali is the night. Shiva's the day. Very simple. And that play between them. And you guys have read all this, right?
Yeah.
All right. So, so let's see. We're going to do... Let me close this. We're going to... So on page 39, second paragraph, and this is stated by Varaha Mihira. And he says, you know, in order to be a competent astrologer... Are you a competent astrologer? In order to be a competent astrologer, and this is according to Varaha Mihira, not me, according to Varaha Mihira, he says, a competent astrologer should know how to calculate the starting and ending of a yuga. You gotta know how to calculate the yugas. The starting and ending of a year, the starting and ending of seasons, of months, of fortnights. What are fortnights?
40 days.
Pakshas, pakshas. They're new moon to full moon to new moon. Day, night, ayama, muhurta, anadika, aprana, and atruti. They should be able to calculate the planetary motions. They should be able to calculate retrogrades, the speed of the planets. They should be able to calculate a calendar. They should be able to calculate the solstices and eclipses. And the length of the day. When he says the length of the day, he means, like, you know, the difference between how long the day is in December versus how long the day is in March and versus July. You know, that different length. One should be able to calculate the longitude and latitude for a place from Ujjain and be able to find the nakshatras and constellations in the sky. And an astrologer should be able to teach this to a learned person. So can you guys teach all that to a learned person?
No. Like to be able to.
So, well, hopefully at least half of it you'll be able to. Then we're done. And so that's what this whole rest of this chapter is trying to get us, maybe not perfect in that realm, but getting us to have the general understanding of all those concepts. Because he says a competent astrologer needs this. And it changes the way our brain works. It really does. And I'll read just a few things from one or two Ganita experts. And when you just read the writing of somebody who's a Ganita expert, you can just see this computer of a brain that's like numbers crunching this, divide it, plus, plus, minus, minus, plus, plus, this, you know, and it's just like, whoa. So we might not become that, but we want to at least be able to understand that reality. All right. So that is why we're about to do what we're about to do, which is learn a bunch of units of time. Right? And so before I go into that, there's this little prayer in the bottom of 38. And I'm going to read the whole thing in the Gita here. But it's a prayer from the Gita, and it says, Namastu Te, most excellent of gods, have mercy and tell me about thy fierce form, original one. I wish to understand thee. I do not comprehend your workings. So this is an important prayer as we begin this chapter here. And let's see. We're gonna read the whole section. You guys okay with reading a little Bhagavad Gita?
Uh-huh.
So this chapter is to be read when somebody dies. And you read this for 40 days. So when somebody dies, you can every day you can read this out loud. And this is considered to help the soul pass on.
Which chapter?
Chapter 11. And if you want to pull it up online or something so that you can see a little something as I read along, I'm using the translation of Winthrop Sargent. Winthrop, W-I-N-T-H-R-O-P, Sargent, S-A-R-G-E-A-N-T. It is my favorite translation. And it's not perfect because none is, but it does to me the most. It's one that's really bias-free, which it's impossible to be 100% bias-free. So I could just be saying it's bias-free because it fits my bias, maybe. But I particularly think that it's bias-free. Or as free of bias as I have seen. Maybe that's the best way to say it. All right, so verse 1. Arjuna spoke, "As a favor to me, you have spoken about the highest secret known as the Supreme Self." So he just talked about the Supreme Self. "With this, my delusion is gone." So he's delusion free. He just understood the Supreme Self. And what a favor Krishna just did to him, right? The origin and the dissolution of beings, which we just studied in chapter 1, right? The origin and dissolution. When we understand the origin, we understand the dissolution. So the Supreme Self, the origin and the dissolution, and we talk a little bit about the Supreme Self at the very end of chapter 1 and how it relates, you know? But the origin and dissolution of beings, these two have been heard in detail by me. From thee, O lotus-eyed, thus is as thou sayest, thou thyself, O Supreme Lord, I desire to see thy princely form. What's the term they're saying, princely? Princely, oof. See, this is where sometimes translation can only be so good. So he's asking to see the Aishwaryam. The Aishwaryam is one of the gunas of the... it's one of the attributes of Shankarsana, Pradyumna, and Aniruddha in the beginning. They have six attributes, and those six attributes each combine and become one of those three. So those three are actually six energies of the Vyakta. And that Vyakta, and so Aishwara means supreme power, the ability to do anything, complete free will. So, you know, the supreme Purushottamam, that you supreme person who is completely free. I want to see your form. He's asking to see the form of that person who's completely free. If thou think it's possible for me to see this, Prince of Yoga, then to me calls to be seen thyself, the imperishable. So he's saying, make me see if you think you can. And Krishna says to him, behold my forms, 100-fold, rather 1,000-fold, various divine, various colors and shape. And he's like, look at all this. Look at all this around, all millions of colors and forms and shapes, it's all me. Behold the Adityas, the Vasus, the Rudras, the Ashwins, the Maruts too. Many wonders unseen before. Behold. So he's telling them, not just like everything manifest here, but so, and in this verse, if we take, there's a whole astrological translation of the Gita. And this verse, he says, behold the Adityas. Those are the sun signs. The Vasus, the planets, and the Rudras, which are the destructions of each of the signs. It's like the eighth from each sign. Behold, I'm them too. So he's telling us that he's all the stellar phenomena as well. Behold now the entire universe with everything moving and not moving, here standing together in my body. So it's like this whole universe is right here in my body. But he's still in his normal shape right now. He's just speaking. And whatever else you desire to see, it's right here in me. But you are able to see me with your own eye. So I give you a divine eye to behold my majestic power. So he says, with that eye, you can't see me, but I'll give you a divine eye. That way you can really see me. Let's see, divine eye here is divyam chakshu. So divine eye, divyam chakshu. To behold my aishwaryam, my supreme unlimitedness. Thus having spoken. Okay, so this is the narrator speaking here. And he says, thus having spoken, does it really use the term Hari? It says, and then Krishna revealed his majestic supreme form of many mouths and eyes, of many wondrous aspects, of many divine ornaments, of many uplifted divine weapons. So all of a sudden, Krishna started multiplying. He started like growing hands and heads and arms and legs. And each hand is holding these different things. And he's just like, he's multiplying and multiplying. And he's, you know, Arjuna's watching. Wearing divine garlands and garments, divine perfumes and ointments. So all these different smells and images are coming to him. Made up of all marvels. The God, endless, facing in all directions. So the arms weren't spreading two-dimensionally. It's like in all directions that he's manifesting as all these different images. Imagine if everything you've ever thought all of a sudden started thinking at the same time. You know, it'd just be this big conundrum, right? If there should be in the sky 1,000 suns risen all at once, such splendor would be of the splendor of that great being. So it's just, you know, the entire universe standing as one, divided in many ways. The entire universe standing as one, divided in many ways. So in the body of the God of gods, so all of a sudden, the whole universe is just showing up in his one body. Then he who possessed by amazement, whose hair was standing on end, I mean his hair was standing up seeing this, bowing his head to the God with reverent gesture, said. And so in the Gita, this is an important section. And the whole Gita is an anustup meter. In this section, it turns to tristup. And all the way until Krishna turns back to normal, it stays in tristup. Now, nowhere else is there tristup in the Bhagavad Gita. The whole Gita is anustup, meaning it's 32 syllables, where here it turns into 44. So it's 11, 11, 11. And this is the rhythm of Rudra, the rhythm of Shiva, the 44, the tristup. And so Arjuna, he's like, oh my gosh. He says, I see gods, O God, in thy body, and all kinds of beings assembled. Lord Brahma on his lotus seat, and all the seers and divine serpents with many arms, bellies, faces, eyes. I see thee everywhere, infinite in form, not the end, nor the middle, nor yet the beginning of thee. I see, O Lord, all these forms of the universe, crowned, armed with club, bearing discus, with immeasurable radiance. I see thee, who art difficult to behold. Thou art unchanging, the supreme object of knowledge, the ultimate resting place, the imperishable defender, the primeval spirit, with infinite power, without beginning, middle, or end, innumerable arms, moon and sun-eyed. His eyes are the sun and the moon. I see thee with thy blazing, oblation-eating mouth, burning all this universe with thine own radiance. And just listen to the attributes, because there's the grand whatever, the crux, the finale that comes, and everything that's being said leads into that finale. The space between heaven and earth is pervaded by thee alone in all directions. Seeing this terrible form, the three worlds tremble. Throngs of God enter into thee, some terrified, with reverent gestures they praise. Hail, thus saying the throngs of great seers and perfected ones, praise thee with abundant praises. The Rudras, Adityas, Vasus, Sandhyas, Vishvadevas, Ashwins, so he's listing all these gods. They all behold thee, amazed, having seen thy great form, which has many mouths and eyes, which has many arms, thighs, and feet, and it just keeps multiplying as he's seeing it. It's just multiplying more and more, which has many bellies and mouths, with gape, with tusks, mighty armed one. The whole world trembles, sky touching, blazing, many colored. gaping mouth with enormous fiery eyes. Having seen thee trembling indeed, my inner self shakes. I find neither courage nor tranquility. So he's getting like, you know, it's getting too much for him. He's like, he's starting to freak here.
You just get shut down.
Having two members in this conference.
It's too much for the...
Yeah. All right. So let's stay in where we have this big vision. Get this big vision in your head.
Okay.
Can you visualize this more hands, bigger, and Arjuna starting to tremble, trembling indeed in my inner self. He's losing courage and he's like losing himself. Having seen thy mouth bearing many tusks, glowing like fires of universal destruction, I lose my sense of direction. I do not find comfort. So he's losing it. He's losing it seeing this vision. Along with all the sons of the army I'm about to battle, along with the throngs of kings, together with ours, also our warrior chiefs, they quickly enter thy fearful mouth. So the whole army he's about to battle, both sides, he sees them all being devoured by Krishna. Just this big form, they call it the Vishwarupa, the all form, the form that has all forms. It's just eating the whole army, which gape with many tusks. Some are seen with crushed heads clinging between his teeth. So he's sitting there watching, and like the whole army, he's just like watching it being chowed down in this mouth, and like literally gorily dismembered. As the many torrents of rivers flow towards the ocean, so yonder heroes of the world of men, they enter their mouths as they flame forth. So he's even saying he saw like the army whole get eaten, and he's seeing even future armies getting eaten. As moths enter the blazing flame, to their destruction with great speed, to their destruction the world swiftly enter thy mouth. Thou lickest, swallowing them on their sides. He's like just eating them. Like it's crazy. All the worlds with flaming mouths, filling the universe with splendor. Terrible rays consume it. Tell me who you are. Homage to you. I wish to understand thee. I don't comprehend you. So that's the prayer right there. Tell me who you are. I praise you. Please have mercy. I don't understand you. I want to understand how this is working. And in answer to who are you? You know what the answer is? Kalosmi. Kalosmi. Very important word. Kala asmi. Kalosmi. And it means time. I am time. So Krishna, he became this crazy innumerable form to show him his supreme free form. It's this crazy disaster, and he says, "Who are you?" And he says, "I'm time." The mighty calls of the world destruction. Here come forth to annihilate the worlds. Even without any action, all those warriors who are arrayed in the opposing ranks shall cease to exist. He said, whether you kill them or not, they're all getting eaten by me. Therefore, stand up and attain glory. Having conquered the foe, enjoy the prosperous kingship. By me these have already been struck down. Be the mere instrument, O archer. So he's telling him, I've already eaten all these people. It's already their destiny for me to eat them. You're just the instrument. You're just here to fulfill what needs to happen. All right. Let's see. At 51, it goes back to normal meter. So I'm just going to read that last little bit. And then at 51, he comes back, you know, because for Krishna, for Arjuna, it's too much. He's like, he's quivering. It's too much. He can't take it. And so he says, please give me back, you know, this old form. And then at 51, Arjuna spoke, seeing this, thy gentle human form, O agitator of men, now I'm composed and restored to normal. Once he's back to normal. You know, we have to, like, end with him going back to normal. Having seen that which has never been seen before, I am delighted, and yet my mind trembles with fear. Calls me to see that form, O God, in which thou originally appeared. Have mercy, Lord of God's dwelling of the universe. I desire to see thee wearing your normal crown. Become your normal form. And so he becomes normal again. But so, I am time. Kalos me. All right, so bottom of page 38 is this prayer here. Namastute, you know, praises, most excellent of gods, have mercy and tell me about thy fierce form. Original one, I wish to understand thee. I do not comprehend your workings. So this is, and next, Krishna says, I am time. So that's what we're going into. We're going into I am time here. All right. And we'll do 10 more minutes, and then we'll do some fun stuff. Let's see. First unit. So the level of timelessness to the all present now, da 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 da, and temporal time. We're landing. We're landing down. All right. So one of our most basic units of time is the 4 seconds, called the prana. Did any of you get to listen to the video that Sapta Rishis did? Or that I did with Sapta Rishis?
No.
I listened to it.
You didn't? Did you get the email?
I saw the email. I didn't look at it. I didn't check it out yet.
Okay.
Is it on the email? The link's there?
The link's there.
Cool.
I remember getting... When did you send it?
Last week. It just came out. How'd it go? Was it good, Frank, or was I going off all around?
It was an addendum.
All right. So in that I talk a lot about the 4 seconds. And the 4 seconds as being this root this root unit of time, and the 4 seconds is 2 breaths in, 2 seconds out. Normal breath.
Or one big breath in.
Nope. If you try and see what your breath does when you're not trying to do something to it. It's only 2 seconds in and 2 seconds out. If you really watch it instead of breathe it, it's 2 seconds in, 2 seconds out. You guys feel that?
I pay attention to my breath a lot, though.
Still, we got, it's 4 seconds, you know?
Yeah.
And so that 4 seconds, 4 times 6 is 24, and that's giving us our gatika. Our gatika and... Our vigatika and the vigatika times another 6 prana create a vigatika composed of 24 seconds, and there are 60 vigatika and a gatika. So gatika, vigatika, important units of time. Bottom of page 41, change gatikas into hours and minutes, and change your hours and minutes of your birth time into gatikas. Make sure you have that done by next class. And you might never need to do that if you only see Americans, but in India you will regularly get gatikas and vigatikas on a birth chart. And if you want to be able to put it into your computer, you're going to need to be able to change it. And yes, there are things online these days that do it for you, but just take a minute and just... You know, do the calculation. That way you'll remember it, and when you just happen to be doing a Panchakarma thing in South India with your boyfriend, and somebody brings you something with gatikas and vigatikas, you know, you don't look stupid by saying, "What's that?" Right? All right. All right, so that's it for today on that. And we're gonna go in the time, but do your conversions. For next week. So you've had that experience. And have any of you ever had to do that? I know you have.
Just because I read your book.
I absolutely loved listening to this chapter. Hmm. It was so good. I mean, it was all good, but really interesting.
It's time. Manifest. All right, so we have two charts. Woman's chart, March 25th, 1980. You guys can put it into your own software. And this is just, I have to do this compatibility tomorrow. So, you guys get lucky enough that we're doing a compatibility.
I love it.
So, March 25th, 1980, at 1:12 p.m. Montreal, M-O-N-T-R-E-A-L, Montreal, Canada. And it should be 15 degrees Cancer Lugna. Let me know when you guys are good and I'll go for the next chart.
I've got it.
All right. And so then boyfriend. And so it's the woman. Woman's the main client and she's coming to check in about this new boyfriend. And so we always take into account who's our primary querent. And in this case, she's the querent. It's not just a couple coming to us. It's a person coming, checking in on this other person. So that's going to make a difference. So the boyfriend is April 6, 1976. a.m. West Palm Beach, Florida. She's been a client for years, so.
She's in our.
Oh, you shouldn't see that.
I shouldn't.
You don't know who that is. You don't know who it is. That's bad.
It's okay. I don't personally.
Okay, good. You don't know who it is.
I just recognize the name as all.
Well, there's lots of women with that name, so. Mm-hmm. All right. So the boyfriend is 12 Sagittarius.
That was April 6, 1976.
Uh-huh.
12:37 a.m.
Yeah. All right. We'll look at his chart first. So we got Venus, Mercury, and Sun in the fourth. Jupiter, K2 in the. And let's see. And so Mercury is Venus is Ucha and Mercury is Nichabunga because it's conjunct in Ucha Graha. So it's a Nichabunga Mercury and an Ucha Venus. Then we got Jupiter in K2 in the fifth, and Jupiter's the Lugna Lord. So Jupiter is Lugna Lord in the fifth. He's got a. What do you think about his decision making?
Good.
He's got a good head on his shoulders, and it's a well-placed Jupiter, so it's not afflicted. Before I say it's not afflicted, 3, 4, it's got a Saturn aspect, and um, So, but it has a Saturn aspect and a Rahu aspect. So, can we say it's 100% good?
Not 100.
No. Nah. It's we could say it's even cursed. And when the head's cursed, what's that mean?
You feel it.
But what's that mean? What's about its decision making?
It's getting influence from the negative grahas.
Which would do what?
Fear. Confusion. There's going to be situations maybe in his life where he's making decisions from those kind of emotions.
Good. And when you say those kind of emotions, be more specific.
Out of fear or confusion as opposed to clarity.
Perfect. Good job. And so we want to strengthen that Jupiter in order to get that more clarity in there. All right. So then we have Mars and Moon in the seventh house. Mars is Marnikar Kastana. And what about that Moon?
Would they usually give an impulse to lots of partners and things like that, or?
But what about the strength of the Moon?
Oh, strength. Not. Mars is gonna hurt the emotional nature some with that.
And it has.
It's decently placed, so I mean.
And it has a Rahu aspect, so it's a Shapa as well. It's under curse. So we have a cursed Moon and a cursed Jupiter. And Marnikar Kastana Mars. So yes, that's going to give a situation. Moon in the seventh and Mars. Mars in the seventh alone kind of makes a person look a little bit outside of relationship. Moon makes a person very sexual. Doesn't particularly make him looking outside of relationship, but it's a cursed Moon, and he's got that Mars there, so how faithful is he going to be? I don't know. There's definitely some issues happening in that zone. Saturn in the 8th. Then we have Arudha Lagna in the 9th, and Rahu in the 11th. And we go real fast to the Navamsha. Saturn is Vargotama. Venus is in Leo. Sun is in Capricorn. Saturn is already, we said, in Cancer. Ketu is in Libra. Venus is in Leo. Moon is Nietzsche. So that means we go back over to the Rashi and we get clear that it's not just a Shapa Moon, but it's not just a cursed Moon, but it's a Nietzsche cursed Moon in that seventh house. So it's a double, you know, it's a double whammy happening there. Mars is in Aquarius and Rahu is in Aries, which is a Parivartana happening. Mercury is Nietzsche. And so that Nietzsche, so remember he was Nietzsche Bunga in the Rashi? But that, it's again Bunga, because it's Nietzsche Bunga, Bunga. So it's Nietzsche Bunga, Bunga. So it was Nietzsche, it got reversed, but then it's reversed again because it's debilitated in the Navamsha.
Okay.
Now, Mercury's in Pisces, Jupiter is in Gemini. So there's a Parivartana happening here. So it's again, that's another Bunga to the Mercury in the Navamsha. So that's actually, it's like Nietzsche Bunga Bunga Bunga. And that does make a difference because we're going to see these big ups and downs in the realm of Mercury. And we want to take that into account because Mercury, if he says, is my Mercury Dasha going to be good? Well, every other week will be good. You know what I mean? There'll be some good things, and then you know, talk about some ups and downs. It'll be crazy. All right. So we have all that going on, and now we have some. I have some doubts about the seventh house. What do we look for in the Navamsha to see about somebody's fidelity?
Karma trines.
No. Weren't we looking at the second house Mars-Venus influence?
Exactly. Let's look at that second house Mars-Venus influence.
It's hit. There it is. Oh. But do we have to rectify, though?
Let's see. So.
Second house has to do with
the end of relationship and why it would end. It's not coming. When does the chart? What's the time change for the Navamsha?
Three minutes, 32 seconds later, or 10 minutes earlier.
So possible that it goes earlier, and if it went earlier, so here we have this Mercury, Moon, Saturn in trines, which, I mean, having that Saturn, Mercury, and Moon in trines, would he be interested in a woman, you know? If we go 3 minutes later, we have Venus and Rahu in trines. I think that looks more like him. Just knowing this person. I know her. His partner is a regular client of mine. So, but we'll see. If it's this chart, he's going to be very effeminate, and we'll do that too. We'll be looking at synastry in a minute. But the big thing is synastry is worthless if you don't understand the charts first. If this guy's a complete cheater, then does it matter that, like, they have, you know what I mean? That if every planet can be perfect, but if this guy has not a faithful bone in his body, then we have to talk about how that's going to look in relationship. And if she's the kind of woman who says, if he cheats on me or looks at another woman, it's over, then we say, you know, he might not be the right guy for you.
Any guy might not be the right guy for her.
Say what?
Any guy might not be the right guy for her.
The big thing is knowing what you're getting into. That's the key. There's no such thing as perfect. Because maybe he sings her just wonderful things and he's the super most romantic guy she's ever been with. And there's a reason, you know? And she says, well, for that, it's worth it. And if it's worth it, then it's worth it. Otherwise, she might be good to have some dry, boring guy who doesn't want to be with anybody besides her. And I'm not saying good or bad. I'm exaggerating here. But you know what I mean? Like, it's all a choice. And our goal is just to make sure that she understands if that is the rising sign. So what would I be looking for the difference between if it was Venus in the rising sign or Saturn in the rising sign in Navamsha?
Stage fright versus
performance,
poetry and art.
Totally. I mean, it's a pretty drastic difference. And that Saturn Mercury in trines is going to be very effeminate.
Doesn't that have to do with potential homosexuality?
If it was in the seventh house trines, it'd be 100% homosexual. But because it's in the first house trines, it's not. He could be, but he doesn't have to. You know what I mean? That's the seventh house. He could just date women who are bisexual.
Okay.
Because it's the seventh from the seventh house.
Yes.
Trines. So from the seventh house, it's her trines. Uh-huh. Now, if he likes people who are bisexual / gay, what's the chance that he's gay?
More so.
But it's not a guarantee. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, And that's the difference between the first house trines versus seventh house trines. Uh-huh. All right. So we have that going on. All right. And then we go back to the Rashi. And we have this Nichamsha moon that's cursed in the seventh house. So what's that going to give in the realm of relationship?
Stress.
On what level?
Seems like it could.
Go ahead.
Obsessive.
Could be.
Obsessive in relationship.
Could be a little obsessive, but more than obsessive. Obsessive is when we have bodhika involved. You're in the right vibe, but obsessive isn't the right word. It's Mars.
Oh, violent?
It could be violent, but where would the violence be coming from?
More of a on the emotional plane because the moon's involved, or
controlling. That Mars, Mars is he's controlling, and so the anger and the aggression and the violence all has this control element to it. So if he does get violent, it's all about she didn't listen to me or she didn't do what she was told. It was, you know, it's a control based situation. Look at the Lord of that moon.
I mean, that's so the body.
Marana Karkastana.
Okay, so it is Bhadaka. It's Bhadakastana. So it is obsessive. He's obsessively controlling of his partner. Very much so. Okay, good. I didn't notice that at first, but you were right, Maggie. You just weren't right for the right reason. So there is a little bit of obsessiveness. There is a little bit of controllingness. Possibility of, you know, because that moon is Nichamsha, there's a moon that's Nichamsha with Mars, and its lord is Nicha Bunga Bunga Bunga. We're looking at somebody who probably throws little fits.
Isn't Mercury also Marana Karakasana?
Yes.
Does that have an impact?
But that's in a different area, not the area of relationship, so.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But lots of little fits. I guarantee it.
Can it still have some, I mean, since it's ruling the seventh, can it have, I mean, some impact since it's, you know,
it's true.
Seventh ruler applying some.
It's going to, but the fourth is going to be more impacting school, business relationships, business partnerships, things of that nature. You know, Mercury has two Marana Karkastanas. It's either in the seventh or in the fourth. So in the fourth, it has more to do with schooling, business type stuff. In the seventh, it has more to do with relationship realm and interpersonal stuff. So yes, it's Marana Karkastana. If he's doing business type stuff with his partner, it'll be horrible. And that's a good point. But don't do business with him.
Mercury's also combust.
It sure is. So it's
that's
angry.
Not a happy Mercury.
Huh?
That's not a happy Mercury, seems like.
But Mercury is what? Mercury is seventh lord.
Right.
So it's not an
angry... in partnerships, he shouldn't feel very good, right?
Oh,
he's
getting burnt up. Yeah. So he's got a little irritable vibe going on there, you know?
All right.
So you see, we need to understand this about him before we even look at the synastry. Because if we're looking at synastry, we could be looking at her perfect part, you know, this incredible guy in some bad synastry. An incredible guy can overcome some bad synastry. This guy, every little issue in the synastry is going to be a major issue that he gets uptight about. So you know, we got to take that into account. One last thing to take into account is the Upapada.
Ruled by Mercury.
Let's see. There's two Upapadas.
Are you taking K2 too?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was looking at the wrong one.
So we have a Mars Upapada and we have a K2 Upapada. So we already see a tendency there for two different elements of desires in relationship, two different ways that he's relating, two different needs he has to be met. And let's look and compare those two different ones. There's one that's in Virgo. What's the needs and desires and situation going on there?
Oh gosh.
How does he treat his spouse?
Manages them, maybe.
Manages them. Look at the Mercury, though. We just talked about the Mercury. Oh, it's totally combust, and you know, this is the 10th Lord. In a fourth house,
not productive,
and mismanaging, and there's a little bit of feeling burnt by marriage, by serious relationship, and look, it's aspected by Saturn and by Mars, so it's cursed. So that first Upapada is cursed, and he's burnt from it. Ooh, you see it. So that's first one. So that's him coming in. That's his view of marriage from yes. The K2 Upapada. Yeah.
So since it's an attempt to, I mean, could you say there's some aspect of recognition or wanting this outer show of the relationship?
You could say that, and also possibility that he wants to have a business. You know, he gets married in order to have a business partner, or he's like, he either marries the person who's helping him in the business, or they get married to have a business together. There's a business kind of, or there's a work related element.
Yeah, A7's there as well. So,
mm-hmm. And then if we look at the Mars Upapada, that is in Capricorn. You guys know about Capricorn Upapadas?
I don't.
They're stingy.
They're what?
Stingy with their spouse. Yeah. They're Saturnine in their marriage.
Stingy with them or towards them?
Just, they're stingy in relationship. It comes out in different ways. But you just know that there's this, like, a Jupiter or a Venus Upapada, they just say, oh, honey, anything of mine is yours. It's all yours. Anything I have, like, we're one. They share everything, you know? There's no locked doors. There's no, this is mine, that's yours. When you get to that, to the Saturn Upapadas, they're like, okay, that shelf's yours, the rest is mine. You can put your something there, but don't touch my stuff over here. And that drawer, that's locked. You can't go in there. So do you get what I mean by stingy in that way?
Yes.
Okay. Anybody got a Saturn Upapada here? Nobody?
No, I don't. I have Jupiter Upapada freedom, but I'm sort of like that in relationships. Is that just because I'm Capricorn?
That would be your Capricorn. But
okay.
Do you have a Saturn aspecting? You're like that in relationship.
How about, no, I don't. Mine is in Pisces.
Mine is too. So we both want a partner that has Pisces Lagna. Let's see. All right, I'm not going to go into that, but all right. So we got we see and look what is aspecting that Upapada. Saturn from the 7th and Mars with his 8th house aspect. So both Upapadas are cursed. The stingy Upapada's cursed and the burnt Upapada's cursed.
So this guy for serious long-term relationship, I'm back. Keep freezing. Oh.
Yeah.
Are we frozen? Oh, there we are.
All right. So, you had a question, Frank, before we go to her chart?
Well, yeah, just the differentiation on the Upapada. Because, I've also heard that's where you can read the spouse, too, from.
Yep, totally.
Is it just there's this connection between what you want and experience in a partner and then what eventually comes?
Okay. Exactly. There's this whole, and the big thing is, though, is even though the Upapada changes, like, how you are in towards that marriage partner stays the root Upapada.
Uh-huh.
So the Upapada changes, but that first relationship is kind of the root that everything's growing from.
And so when there's a dual one, then, is it just, it depends which one takes root?
They're both going to be, we have multiple personalities that live inside of us.
Yeah.
There's who you are in the classroom with those little kids. There's who you are in the yoga studio. There's who you are with your wife. We different parts of our self show up in different places. And there's who we are with our spouse, which is the Upapada. And then there's, sometimes there's these dual personalities in the same area. So that's the way I look at it. So I already know the woman's chart, so we're going to go through that pretty fast. Let's jump over to her, and then we'll do the synastry. You guys okay going over a little bit? This is worth going over?
Yeah.
I'm game.
Okay. So we look at her chart, and we have 15 degrees Cancer Lagna, and it has the moon in it. And what a beautiful moon in that Lagna and its own sign, except it's got Rahu and Saturn second from it. And whenever Rahu and Saturn are conjunct second from something, they always hurt the thing because they they starve it. So it's a beautiful moon, but it's kind of getting starved right there. So she does a yearly puja to take care of that. And then in the second, we have Rahu, Saturn, and Mars, totally cursed Jupiter. Did the guy have a cursed Jupiter? Yeah. You think two cursed Jupiters are going to get along well?
Probably not.
Only if they both understand each other. Jupiter, when it's cursed, there's the person doesn't want to commit. They're like, I like you, but maybe there's somebody better. So I'll date you right now, but I don't think I'm going to marry you because I just might meet somebody better tomorrow. And so as long as they both know that, they love each other, they're there for each other, they're both looking for something better. You know what I mean? As long as it's understood that they both have a hard time committing. That's what that cursed Jupiter does. It gives a hard time committing. And one of the remedies for that is I have a person commit to something. And I have them commit to something silly, like to every week go do something, or sometimes it's just adopting a kid when there's a cursed Jupiter. That way they've committed to take care of that kid until it's 18 years old, and they send so much money every month. But they've made a commitment, and that commitment, it just helped. They have a hard time committing. Which, what's that going to do for these relationships here? So then we have Mercury and Ketu in the 8th house, aspected by Saturn and Mars. So it's a cursed Mercury. And that cursed Mercury is going to give some difficulty with her communicating. What is... Four planets in one house, a desire for sannyas. Let me tell you, this woman is not a sannyas. In no way.
Yeah, I've heard it's just messy because there's too many opinions and all that.
Well, maybe her messiness will eventually cause her to want to renounce everything.
This person's like a Burning Man kind of person, like not renouncing anytime soon. Those kind of clothes and yeah, it's. I got a lot of Burning Man clients. I have such I have such a weird array of clients. It's just strange. I get llamas and then these Burning Man people and then psychologists from the Bay. It's all right. So cursed Mercury, communication difficulties. It's in the eighth house, which adds to those communication difficulties. We got Sun. Sun is debilitated in the Navamsa. It's in the ninth house. It's in a Parivartana with Jupiter. So the Sun is actually uplifting that Jupiter. So if that was just a normal Jupiter, she would never be able to commit. That Parivartana is like saying, hey, you can do this. For Dharma's sake, you can commit. But not really. Then we have Venus with the Aruta Lagna, and it's the Baddha Kesha. Can aspect it by Rahu. So there we go with our burner outfit. You know what I mean? The Aruta Lagna has Baddha Kesha, Venus, aspected by Rahu. It's complete Burning Man attired person. Right there. There's the stamp, okay? Let's see. Then we go to the Navamsa. And in the Navamsa, she's got Saturn and Venus in Jupiter house. Is there any association with Mars? No, there's not. So we don't see any desire for, you know, extramarital affairs there. Rahu is in the seventh house, exalted. So what kind of guys do you think she likes?
Handsome ones.
Foreigners.
What kind of foreigners? It's exalted. It's exalted, Rahu. And it's only Ayu exalted, though, really, so...
That makes me think of physical, you know, just because... Someone...
Sexy foreigners.
it's a Venus sign, so she is going for sexy foreigners. I bet you he's going to be... I don't know. We'll see. All right. Anything else there in the Navamsa? We go back. Let's look at her Upapada. She has only one Upapada. Luckily, she doesn't have a split personality there. And that Upapada is lorded by Venus.
Darn it.
No, we were just planning our next meeting. So okay. It's okay. Yes.
Upapada is ruled by Venus. How is she in relationship? What did I say about that Venus Upapada?
Giving, sharing.
Totally.
Partner orientated.
So this, if he did become serious partner, what number serious partner is he? Which number is she? What number is he to her if they become a serious relationship?
Are we just trying to look at the different Upapadas to see how it matches with his chart?
Totally.
Would it be the third?
Yep, he's number three.
How did you see that?
So first Upapada is this Libra. And so this is this Israeli guy that she loved for a long time, but just he wouldn't commit to her. But she says he wouldn't commit, but I'm pretty sure she was the one that didn't give him what he needed to commit, and it was just some backwards thing because of that Jupiter. Then we go to the next Upapada, which is that Taurus, and it's gone 12th from it. So she married somebody just for a green card, lived with him for a while, and then it didn't work out, and she ran off with someone else for a little bit. And so now she's bringing in this chart, and so he's third Upapada if he becomes a serious thing.
Matches.
Which and most
so
likely
Frank, matches that just ascendant. Because of matches the Lagna? Or how did you know that, Frank?
Oh, so first Upapada is Libra. Eighth from that is Taurus. Eighth from that is Sagittarius. And his lugna,
I get that
one. His lugna, the boyfriend's lugna, is Sagittarius.
Okay, so you can really tell that way?
Yeah.
Crazy.
And old people all the time. Because old people, they have less relationships. So I sit there and go, oh, so he's your third long-term partner. They're like, really? You can see that? Like, it blows them away, you know? But the big thing with Indians is when they come to you, and like, let's say they're on marriage one. So they're on, you know, so if this was an Indian woman, and she comes and she says, this husband, he's cheating on me. He's running around with other women, da da da, you know. So we see it's this Libra here, right? And it's Venus Baddha Kesha with Rahu. So you know, some, you know, whatever. He's a player. And she says, is my next husband, is he gonna be, you know, faithful and loving and everything like that with me? What would you say?
What are we talking about?
With this guy?
If this was an Indian woman. Okay, we can't see it, but yeah. I'm going to talk. We'll see if it kicks me off. I don't know why it's doing this tonight, but... So we look... The Upapada 2 is the next husband. And she wants to know, is this one going to be faithful to me? What would you say?
I don't see why not.
You have been kicked from this conference.
Oh. All right. So the second husband, I'd say he would be just as bad as the first. And maybe even worse, why? Since Venus is 12th from the second Upapada. You know, so and it's the lord of the Upapada's 12th from itself. So he's somebody who total self-defeating kind of thing and spends all his money on some weird Venus affairs. So yeah. And then we go to the 8th from that, and then we have this Jupiter here. And we'd say, "Wow, Jupiter, like what a nice guy, but her Jupiter's all cursed, right?" And tell me, does that fit the chart that we're looking at of the guy?
Yeah, but what about the fact that with the Parivartana with Jupiter and Sun?
I mean, that's there, but the big thing is that Jupiter in her chart of that Jupiter is indicating her that Sagittarius is indicating that next spouse, and it's a cursed Jupiter. And we look at this guy, and his Lugna Lord is Jupiter cursed.
Yeah.
So we have and it's in the fifth house, which is naturally ruled by Leo. So there we have some solar whatever to it, you know? But so we see these overlaps. And so we see, yes, whether we say yes or no about this guy, she's gonna be with him no matter what. So I basically determined that already, which is gonna change how I'm gonna speak to her about this guy anyway. Because if it didn't look like he'd be the one, then I'd tell her how horrible it looks. But I can't do that because, you know, yeah. You with us, Frank?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm on the phone.
Okay.
The computer I was using went out.
All right. So now...
What do you say? What do you say to her, Freedom?
Well, hold on. First, we're doing the analysis. We haven't finished analysis yet. So we analyzed his chart, right? And we analyzed her chart. Now let's do the synastry. And so for me, these days when I do synastry, I have an overlay chart and I use a red pen, a blue pen, and a green pen. And first thing I do is I look at the ascendants. And the ascendants are, she's Cancer and he's Sagittarius. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So it's a 6-8 relationship. All right, then we look at the sun. And the suns are in a yoga. So that gets my green pen. The ascendants have my red pen. The sun is in a yoga, that gets my green pen. Then I look at the moon. And the moon are in a 2-12 relationship. Which is, that gets my red pen. Then we look at Mars. and Mars is 311. So that gets my blue pen. Blue pen's neutral. Then we look at Mercury. Mercury is 212. And that gets my red pen. Now, do you think she can deal with a 212 Mercury?
He or she?
She. Based upon the Mercury in her chart?
Oh.
Her Mercury was cursed in the 8th house. Remember that? So a 212 Mercury, that's a big deal. Now, let's say it was two people. They had, like, really awesome Mercuries. One had it in the 10th house. One had it in Lugna. And it was a 6-8 or 212 relationship. But they both had it really well placed. They can compensate. But can she compensate? No. She doesn't have the ability to compensate for that. She doesn't have the mercurial skill.
And he's got that nasty Mercury, too, so...
Oh, yeah, he does. He has that combust Mercury. So that Mercury is going to really be their big... And the moon's 212, that's no good either. The ascendant 6-8, that's no good. But that Mercury is going to be the real killer there. Just because they already have tough Mercuries. And then that just draws it out. They don't have good Mercuries together. Then we look at their Jupiters. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So we got a trine for Jupiter there. So that goes in green for me. So it means they have a deep spiritual connection, and they can both understand each other's inability to commit. And, you know, like, they both have a problem committing. Their Jupiters are in alignment. They approach it the same way. That's going to be good. So you see, that thing that we thought might be an issue ends up that it most likely won't be their major issue. And then, let's see, Venus. Let's see their sex life. And so 1, 2, it's 212. And so it shows that there's going to be some disagreements in the realm of sexuality, as well as Venus also shows taste, how you decorate a house kind of situations. So there's going to be some disagreement in which, you know, like how you decorate the house, that can be worked out. But the sex life can be a difficult one. And him with his Mars-Moon situation... His Mars cursed moon, Nichamsha, in the 7th house, that Venus 212 is going to really bring some issues there. And let's see, we look at Saturn. Saturn is 212 as well. No good there. And the North Node is 311. All right. And Kutas between the two charts are 12. You guys know about Kutas? 36 is good. Anything less than half starts to be a little bit more conflict. They have 12 between their charts. It's really low. So that's how well the moons get along. And so that being low, it shows a little dissonance, though the chart can make up for it. So notice we're not using one thing. We used each chart, and we're using the combination, and we use the Kuta points. And so in the chart, we have Jupiter and Sun being in the green, being beneficial combinations. We have Mars and Rahu being in a neutral situation. And Rahu is how they argue. It's how they settle disputes. And then we have Moon, Saturn, and Venus and Mercury in a 212 and Ascendant 6-8. Now, whenever there's more than three 6-8 or 212s, I tell the person, I don't think it's going to be the best match. And here we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We have five of my red pen. and low Kuta points, and difficult charts as it is already for relationships. So it's not going to work. But they're going to do it anyway. So... so I'll have a fun time talking to him. All right. What would you say to him, Maggie, huh? And they're in love. They're completely in love.
Oh, boy.
They're even thinking about getting married next month. They're so in love.
Really?
No, I'm just joking, okay. Joking. What would you say? They've come to you. They're thinking about getting married next month or sometime in the spring. They fully love each other. What do you say?
Well, I mean, if that's the case, I guess I would just talk more specifically about where the points of contention would be and maybe how those could be dealt with.
With this, I would try and see if they could put it off, the wedding off for a year. I'd say, oh, this is not a good year for you to get married. This is definitely not the right year. Can you wait 1 year? It's going to be way better next year.
Just to see if they self-destruct on their own?
Uh-huh. And I'd say, I'd look at his chart, and he's running a Saturn K2 Antardasha. I'm like, oh, you don't want to get married in Saturn K2. And Venus starts in March of next year. I'd say, wait till the Venus Antardasha comes. Then it'll be sweet love. If you get married now, it wouldn't be the best. I'd do something to talk him out of getting married right now. Because give him a year or two, and they'll self-destruct on their own. You see how bad this chart is, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But they might get married anyway, particularly with that Upapada in her chart. So then you would talk about how to deal with it and overcome that and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. All right. So I think we're good for the night. I don't know if it's going to cut us anytime soon. I'm going to stop the recording.
So if I have people, like I have this one friend with their shoes in her chart and she wants to come to Nevada City to do a puja.
Uh-huh.
Are there people there who would do that for... Just out of town.
Viruji is here and does do pujas, but she would have to organize it way ahead of time.
Like how far ahead of time?
Well, the big thing is he's not always here. Like right now he's in India. He's going to be back in a few weeks. And then when he's here, he's got all kinds of other rituals and stuff that he does. And he's down, goes to the bay occasionally for some temples down there. So calling him and really setting it up so that, you know, they coordinated ahead of time.
Okay.
What puja does she want done?
Well, I don't know exactly. I haven't looked at it enough, I think.
She just wants some pujas done.
Well, she knows there's an issue with her son. It's a debilitated son, and it's right on the edge, and she thinks it's ruining her life, so...
Yes. Then she might want a puja.